The latest book from author Mike Pelacek, Johnny Moon. I've read JFK Assassination Fiction by Don DeLillo and Norman Mailer and can tell you that this new novel not only is Mike's best book yet, it's much better than DeLillo's and Mailer's efforts to do justice to the most important event in U.S. history. Johnny Moon tells the story of a third grader in a Catholic school who wants to do what President John F. Kennedy asked us all to do. Johnny has told his classmates he wants to go to the moon. In fact, he wants to be the first one on the moon. And so the kids brand him with the nickname Johnny Moon. Sister M&M's is Johnny's teacher. Her sister was in Dallas that day, right up close to the limousine taking pictures just as it happened. She saw some things that did not get reported back in Johnny's hometown Daily News. Sister M&M's and Johnny and the third grade Sacred Heart class decide to tell the truth about what happened. Harvey Wasserman on Johnny Moon. Mike Pelacek is a master of mixing the ethos of the heartland with great moments in history. His Johnny Moon evokes that time in our national story when getting to our favorite satellite was mated with the generation's coming of age. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. The latest book from author Mike Pelacek, Johnny Moon. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org. WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com.
It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelacek.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. I was visiting one morning last week with a Swedish friend, Isn't it wonderful the way we can chat with people all over the world? I'd come up with a potential plot development for the book she's rewriting. You know, that's an action I didn't think was needed, but it seems to be producing improvement to something I already liked a lot. So I guess writers know better than editors sometimes. That's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to tell you about a revelation that came to me during this chat. You know, I tend to get a little carried away. When I have an idea I think is good, I'm going to keep on talking about it, even after it's been politely rejected. Maybe some of you recognize that tendency in yourselves or some of the people around you. But I know I do it. I try to keep it to a minimum. My wife, Lorraine's complained about it before. So have friends, family, employers upon occasion. What was cool this time was an offhand remark that led to an interesting speculation. A friend noted that I'd only sent 3 extra messages before figuring out she really didn't want to hear any more. And I said, well, patience is a virtue. My father used to say that a lot. Probably he needed a lot of it to deal with me. And she said, I can imagine. Well, but she followed that with the observation that I inherited a lot of it. So it evened up. And that led to my revelation. You see, she's quite right. I not only show a great deal of patience and acceptance to others' behavior, but I have a capability of sorely testing the patience of those around me. I think I'm not alone with this combination of seemingly opposite tendency. I think I had to develop patience for others because I'm so difficult myself. Actually, I hope I'm not quite that difficult these days, but I used to be quite a terror sometimes. Could it be that those of us who have the most patience are those who've needed it the most from other people? Don't you think that's something to think about? So today I challenge each of you to turn the other cheek. Forgive an offense, whether real or imaginary, and accept rather than judging. The more of us who appreciate others, the more others will appreciate each other. The more things there will be in life for all of us to appreciate. And now, my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome Julius Awafong, coming back to us from Cameroon, and Peter Mock. Peter Mock is a new guest. He is from Virginia, Minnesota, about an hour or 45 minutes north of where I'm at right now. It's again time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American-Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour, because we have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, the tortured tundra. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table now sit empty, their relatives having sent them to Siberia merely by a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. The New American Dream. What do we want? When do we want it? I remember singing that song a couple times. Well, you'll see this list as exotic pie in the sky, but it should not be that way. Not in a real America. All we have to do is to become the Americans we always thought we were. All you have to do is be all you can be. What we want to do is, 1, cut military spending, get ROTC out of the high schools and colleges. Killing should not be a subject of study. Close the School of the Americas. Close the U.S. military bases in all the other countries. Spend massive tax dollars on schools, housing, employment in the poor areas of the United States, cities, rural, knowing that any people that claims to be Christian or religious or even human must reverse spending on killing and put it into good things for people. Abolish the CIA. Investigate the CIA, FBI, fully. Find out what they've been up to over the years and reevaluate any further activity. Release nonviolent drug offenders from prisons. Demolish a couple of prisons just because it's the right thing to do. Open the borders north, south, east, west. Raise the minimum wage. stop logging on public lands allows citizens some way to opt out of paying taxes for any military activity. Outlaw assault weapons, stop factory farming, provide universal health care. Something, something to break up the political monopoly held by Democratic and Republican parties. Also something, something to encourage real media diversity. Let the public know what the government knows or does not know about UFOs. We're up to 17 now. Proceed confidently into the coming century, not as a bandit criminal nation, but as a nation determined to carry out the real American dream. If there were a real Democratic Party in the United States with real people and courage, guts, honor, this would not seem to be so far out an agenda at this point in time. They'd also want to repeal and repent the so-called drug war. And they would want to investigate the many things that Americans doubt about their country, just conspiracies, that is. And they would care, really care about the poor. And that example would spread through the country. And we would not be stupid idiots anymore. This is our dream. We are Americans. It's an amazing time to be alive. We survived Kate Smith on the radio back in 2001. That was not easy. We survived Bush. Now we're trying to survive Obama. It's morning. Time to wake up. There are no longer any questions we cannot ask. Nothing about our country we are not allowed to know. We are Americans. This is our country. Today we take it back from the CIA, the military, the bosses, the Warren Commission, the 9/11 Commission, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Barack Obama. Our children will study lies no more. Did George W. Bush, his father, his father's friends, actually steal the elections of 2000 and 2004? Well, if they did that, why would they ever stop at anything? Just asking. Did George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, Condoleezza Rice, John Ashcroft, Paul Wolfowitz, Colin Powell conspire to commit murder and treason in the 9/11 attacks in order to again be able to lie about anthrax, uranium, and the WMD, and torture, in order to attack Iraq and make billions, billions of dollars? We want to know, we need to know, we deserve to know. We deserve to know who killed Bobby Martin, JFK, Wellstone. Did we land on the moon? Is Bigfoot real? No, but there's no wrong questions. How about UFOs? Come on, there are no wrong questions, remember. No secrets, and anyone's land is free. How do we explain to our children how the war on drugs goes with this buzz for you? Prisons, poverty, trees, wind power, we can talk about all of it, because we are Americans. We are not the subjects of the FBI or CIA or the U.S. Army or Wall Street. We do not torture, kill children, bomb, rape, mutilate. We are Americans. We are Americans. Why is Leonard Peltier in prison? Why did we fund death squads in El Salvador? We overthrew elected governments in Chile, Iran, Guatemala. Really? Why did you vote for that? We deserve to know. We need to know. We have to know so that we may tell the world we are Americans. Don't be afraid to be a real American. Remember, they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being if it's just been politics all along? What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through all American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity and that is all energy free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American Founders version? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org.
For Mr. Rogers' Midwestern Neocon Tea Party neighborhood. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Beautiful day for a neighbor. You look like a reasonable person, huh? Yes, you do. You'd be mine. Could you be mine? You look like you might give a shit about the wars and not talk about your lawn seed on the same day that we begin to bomb Baghdad. Perhaps you're not like those other yokels in our tidy little neighborhood. You have a brain inside your head, not Hazy. Yes, you do. Would you? Could you? Believe me? The American dream. It's time to wake up. You're not sleeping. It's daytime. You look out your window. Robins, squirrels, wiener dog poop. Fair to partly cloudy. It's all a fairy tale. You're inside a children's book with dragons and monsters and evil kings and queens. You're a character inside someone else's made-up book. How'd we come to this, my neighbor? We have fake history, boys and girls. Yes, we do. Our junior high and high school history books should be in italics, handed out by the teacher on the first day with a wink. Remember the Maine, Pearl Harbor, Gulf of Tonkin, Waco, Oklahoma City bombing, Waco, moon landing, stolen elections. To talk about conspiracy or government lying in the United States, it's like being a person who spent the day upstairs alone writing poetry and steps out into the corner to hand those poems out to passerby. We accepted the Warren Commission, so we got the 9/11 What Control Demolition Commission. Our children get the XYZ non-investigation by rich people covering up for rich people. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Somebody said that. We have not been vigilant. We were watching TV. We think the country runs on cruise control, the heavy lifting having been done earlier in the morning by those who gave us the 8-hour day, the minimum wage, and ended war. They suffered, they struggled, they died that we might be free. That's where our thanks should go, where our examples lie, not in the military. This is not a democracy, it's something other, based on wealth and power and prestige and celebrity. Those in power are not really concerned with the truth. They're really concerned with remaining in power. Anything they do is based on that. The poor are ridiculed, persecuted, and hunted down in America. The chase sounded by barking pigs on the radio. America is not inherently benign. They don't say that in American high schools and colleges. Most Americans are ignorant of their own history. We let the Bush government get away without investigating 9/11 until over a year later, then putting through a whitewash and calling it good enough. And so we're at war seemingly everywhere in the service of rich men and women seeking to become richer, not in the service of single mothers working three jobs, taking their kids to daycare at 5 a.m., not in the service of desperate young people seeking out the military to become perverted kind of hope and life. We need to ask questions. Hold signs. Sit in congressional offices. Pound on missile silos. Refuse to pay taxes or it will never stop. They did not stop the war in Vietnam because it was the right thing to do. Only because they were forced to by good, hardworking people who believed in themselves, who gave themselves a chance to succeed. By walking out the front door, down to the corner, handing out their poems, holding up their signs in the neighborhood. I just want to say thank you for all you do. I've always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. Always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you.
Hello, I'm Tom Brady from the New England Patriots. And because I'm afraid if I tell you the truth, I won't be able to live my good life in America and be a pro football player on TV and rich and have a car and a house and family in America. If I tell you the truth about America and its soldiers, I will be destroyed. Hello, I'm Joseph, high school football coach. I am a coward. I'm a co-conspirator in the raping and murdering and plundering of the world by America's military. I'm Ann, emergency room nurse. I am an American. I'm afraid of other Americans, really afraid. I'm Bill, your dentist. I want to be liked. I don't want to be an outcast. I'm Mrs. Thompson, your daughter's third period English teacher. I want to be able to exist, at least exist within a thin bubble. I get one chance at living, and I'm not going to waste it by telling you the truth. Thank you to all of our nation's veterans and on-duty military for protecting us. You keep us free. You are heroes.
Our first guest tonight is Julius Awafong from Cameroon. He's been with us once before, and we're glad to have him back. Once again, his portion is pre-recorded, and we're leading off with a poem having to do with Mother Africa.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you for having me once again on your show. Today, my poem is entitled Children of Mothers, Children of the World. Children of Mother Africa, Mother of the World. We are all children of our mothers. Our mothers are our blessed mothers. Our mothers are the best gift for us. Be they rich, poor, educated and non-educated, be they physically impaired or whole, our mothers have the same love for us. Sweet mother, I no go forget you, for the suffer way you suffer for me, sings Prince Nikom Barga. L'amour d'une mère ne s'éteint jamais, confirms Patience Dabani in her song. Children of Mother Africa, Mother of the World. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia, Pratibha Patel of India, Julia Julia of Australia, Angela Merkel of Germany, Dilma Rousseff of Brazil, Queen Elizabeth II, Margaret II, and Beatrix. We are all children of mothers and mothers of children. Children of Mother Africa, be we leaders, Paul Biya, Obiang Gema, Goodluck Jonathan, Jacob Zuma, Barack Obama, Nicolas Sarkozy, David Cameron. Be with the wealthiest men, Carlos Helu, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett. Be we poor and homeless children in Chad, Kenya, Malawi, Lesotho, Ivory Coast, Senegal, North and South America, Europe and Asia. Our mothers went through the same agony to bring us into the world. Children of Mother Africa, Mother of the World. Protecting human lives, protecting the planet for future generations are our main task. All mothers want their children to be successful, to be the best. Dear Mama, I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed. Tupac sings. Children of Mother Africa, no mother is more motherly than the other, so no child is more of a child than the other. Our mothers are special to us. No one can take their places in our heart. Ain't no man alive that could take my mama's place, Tupac declares. Our mothers sacrifice for us. When I dey hungry, my mother go run up and down. She go find me something where I go chop. When I dey sick, my mother go cry, cry, cry. She go say instead when I go die, make she die. So again, sings Prince Nikom Barga. Children of Mother Africa, mothers don't give birth to dictators, warlords, embezzlers. Mothers don't give birth to power mongers, thieves, murderers. Mothers in their tummies don't carry greedy people and arm robbers. No mother wants a child to be a slave to another mother's child. No mother wants a child to be colonized by another mother's child. No mother wants a child to be a murderer of other mother's children. Our mothers sacrifice their lifetime to educate and train us to be the best. For we are all born out of love and with love. Yes, we are all brought into the world with love. Je t'ai élevé avec amour, Patience Dabani declares in her song again. Children of Mother Africa, mothers of children of Africa feel ashamed when their children, presidents, unable to listen to brothers and sisters of the same nation, hurriedly respond to the call of another mother's child, president of a Western nation. Children of mothers, Nelson Mandela, Patrice Lumumba, Thomas Sankara, Nyobeye, Ernest Nwande, Steve Biko, George Washington, Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Aung San Suu Kyi. We too have to conquer greed, fear, and ignorance. Be committed more than ever before to make our mothers and children happy. children of Mother Africa, we have to change ourselves. We have to change our communities. We have to change our countries. We have to change Africa. We must let peace reign. We must let dialogue reign. A dialogue whose absence in Somalia, Sudan, Ivory Coast, Libya, Nigeria, due to greedy politics, religious beliefs, and ethnicity, is sending beyond both mothers and children. Children of Mother Africa, President, why do you use your regimes to transform children of other mothers to killing machines who assist other killers like AIDS, malaria, cancer, corruption, poverty, underdevelopment, ignorance, and fear to kill vulnerable children of other mothers? We have to know that the love we have for our mothers and families is the same with those who elect us. Running and listening to the West for advice to govern those who elect us is as ridiculous as running after excrement for food. When we have food right in our house, we are elected so that together with our citizens, we can manage the resources of our nations, develop Africa, and help some poor continents and some less privileged parts of the earth. Children of Mother Africa, why do we kill ourselves, present and future mothers? Why do we promote rebellion, anarchy? Can a bullet or a missile give life, promote health, build classrooms, tar roads, and give shelter? Why are we one of the richest continents and at the same time tagged as poor and heavily indebted? Children of Mother Africa, our mothers from the urban and rural areas did not request any aid from the World Bank or IMF to till the hard soil of Western grasslands, to conquer the dense equatorial timberlands, to challenge the heat and cold of some desert regions, to raise us to be who we are today. Children of Mother Africa, we must realize that, contrary to what others make us believe, we are a rich people in a rich continent. We shouldn't give room for others to exploit and transform us to people who die of hunger in the midst of abundant food, people who die of thirst in a pool of potable water, people who die of sickness in the midst of drugs. Children of Mother Africa, have we ever asked ourselves why the Western nations, with all the atomic bombs and the most dangerous and recent missiles, never use them on their own lands? Have we found out why election problems in some Western nations don't take them to violence? Children of Mother Africa, look at the Eiffel Tower of France, the tall and beautiful buildings of Chicago, New Jersey, New York, beautiful street and amusement parks of Britain, Germany, and ask ourselves if we think their presidents, queens, and citizens will ever allow a problem to escalate into the destruction of these beautiful and expensive edifices. Children of Mother Africa, it is astounding and degrading to find children of the ruling and non-ruling parties in African nations treat one another with scorn, intimidation, and as people of senseless opinions. Children of Mother Africa, unity is strength. It is time to take the continent's destiny into our hands. A unity of weak people is stronger than a mishmash of strong people. A unity of less educated people is more promising than a jumble of highly educated people. We shouldn't fall in the traps of our ignorant predecessors. We and not Westerners vote for our presidents. Their remuneration emanates from our hard work and not from that of the citizens of the West. So, they are accountable to us just as the counterparts of the West are accountable to their citizens. Children of Mother Africa, those of us in the armed force, we are children of mothers. The love from our mothers warrants us not to allow ourselves to be transformed into killing machines of other mothers' children. Our mothers want to feel loved when we use our strength and knowledge to kill killers of other mothers' children like famine, illiteracy, bad roads, energy insufficiency, unfair exploiting act towards our natural resources. Children of Mother Africa, our bosses, our presidents, kings, queens, traditional rulers and soldiers, we are all children of our mothers. We shouldn't allow ourselves to be used as atrocious tools in the hands of some fanatic officials. We shouldn't bestow curses upon ourselves by doing what we know is wrong. Our mothers brought us into the world, groomed us with reason, for us to use it right. That is the end of my poem, Chuck.
Julius, you are a man of many talents. This is a powerful message of love and community, but there are undertones of frustration, violence. How do you expect that our readers and listeners will feel about your poem?
Yeah. Recently, the electoral violence in some African nations, the war in Libya, have killed thousands of children who have been raised, educated, in fact, children who in some societies are looked upon as investment of miserable African parents. They are murdered by the dictatorial regimes and rebels. They are murdered by other children and parents who are leaders of some powerful nations of the world simply because of oil. In Hillary Clinton's Living History Memoir, she describes how her parents raised her to love her God, her country, and to help others. On pages 10 and 11 of her book, she says this, which I'm going to read. My mother loved her home and her family. My mother was offended by the mistreatment of any human being, especially children. She hated self-righteousness and pretensions of moral superiority. Hillary Clinton, again on page 12, says this. Both my parents conditioned us to be tough in order to survive whatever life might throw at us. They expected us to stand up for ourselves, me as much as my brothers. Sometimes I came in crying, complaining the girl across the street was always pushing me around. I was only 4 years old, but my mother was afraid that if I give in to my fears, it would set a pattern for the rest of my life. One day I came running into the house. She stopped me. Go back out there, she ordered. And if Susie hits you, you have my permission to hit her back. You have to stand up for yourself. There's no room in the house for cowards. End of quote. Chuck, frustration and violence are undertones of my poem because all parents feel frustrated and even think of violence when their children behave or are treated as cowards. President Obama, on his part, described his children as, let me read, when I sit down with my 6-year-old and my 3-year-old at night and I'm reading a book to them, and then I tuck them into go to sleep, that's a little piece of heaven that I hang on. So, the question one will ask is, if children of presidents, military generals, senators, governors, mayors, wealthy men and women, magistrates, are more important, or they are more of a human being than children from poor and powerless homes, do parents, like presidents, secretary generals, secretary of state, governors, wealthy men and women, think they are more important than other parents simply because they are poor and powerless? What makes some people think they have the moral right and the moral gift to stand and tell other parents to tell them how to raise and what to do with their children? Just as Peter Isoka, I will also declare that Africa is golden. Children and mothers of the world are gold. For we have gone through fire. We have gone through the harshness of life, sometimes passing through the gaping valleys with shadows of death. We have to stand against all odds and beat the pettiness of the world around us. Recently, the electoral violence in some African nations, the war in Libya, have killed thousands of children who have been raised, educated, in fact, children who in some societies are looked upon as investment of miserable African parents. They are murdered by the dictatorial regimes and rebels. They are murdered by other children and parents who are leaders of some powerful nations of the world simply because of oil. In Hillary Clinton's Living History Memoir, she describes how her parents raised her to love her God, her country, and to help others. On pages 10 and 11 of her book, she says this, which I'm going to read. My mother loved her home and her family. My mother was offended by the mistreatment of any human being, especially children. She hated self-righteousness and pretensions of moral superiority.
We'll hear some more of Julius another time, but we're running over time, so I'm going to have to cut that off. I really appreciate Julius being part of our show, and we're going to skip right on past our normal advertisement to the New American Dream Masterpiece Classic Playhouse Theater, Mike.
Now we bring you the New American Dream Masterpiece Classic Playhouse Theater, something, something. Real voices with a message that you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News. These voices are from Philip and Daniel Berrigan, American priests, activists, writers, and poets. Philip was actually born in Two Harbors, which is not too far from where I'm at now, north of here on the North Shore. Daniel Berrigan was born in Virginia, Minnesota, about a half hour to 45 minutes away from us. I had the good fortune of being able to meet them on a couple of occasions. Philip has passed away, and Daniel is still living. Okay, Chuck.
This is from Daniel. Our apologies, good friends, for the fracture of good order, the burning of paper instead of children, the angering of the orderlies in the front parlor of the charnel house. We could not, so help us God, do otherwise. The time is past when good men can remain silent, when obedience can segregate men from public risk, when the poor can die without defense. Because we want the peace with half a heart and half a life and will. The war, of course, continues because the waging of war by its nature is total, but the waging of peace by our own cowardice is partial. Certainly the trouble is not that we do not want peace. We've seen enough war. We're sick of it unto death. The war has come home like a stalking corpse, tailing its blood, its tears, its losses, its despairs, seeking like an American ghost the soul of America. We want the peace, but most of us do not want to pay the price of peace. We still dream of a peace that has no cost attached. We want peace, but we live content with poverty and injustice and racism, with the murder of prisoners and students, the despair of the poor to whom justice is endlessly denied. We long for peace, but we wish also to keep undisturbed a social fabric of privilege and power that controls the economic misery of two-thirds of the world's people. Mike, with our time, I'm thinking that we should skip ahead to the second interview at this point.
You do that. Go right into it.
Okay. I am very pleased to have had a guest in the last week, my cousin Peter Mock. He lives actually very close to Mike, and when he was down here visiting my 96-year-old mother and me, my wife, I took the opportunity to interview him for this show, and we're going to play that interview for you now. Len Roland, down here visiting in Florida, and I've imposed on him to talk to you folks. We're going to talk mostly about the intriguing experiences with international students that Peter has enjoyed while he was growing up and as an adult. Peter, why don't you start off telling us a little bit about how you ended up in Virginia, Minnesota, you know, when you moved there and what it was like.
Okay, Chuck, how did I get to Virginia? Well, I was born in Chicago. I was the fourth born of five kids to my parents, and we lived in a suburb north of Chicago, Evanston. My father was a doctor in Chicago and a fairly successful, busy practice as a general surgeon. So, to keep it short, when I was 12 years old, my father saw fit to leave the busy life of a Chicago doctor, in which he only had 2-3 weeks a year to really spend with his family doing what he wanted to do, which was usually a camping trip, outdoor adventure, and move up to northern Minnesota, where we'd be living right in the middle of the woods, basically. A small town, but like I always told people, the amazing thing was I could leave my house and in 10 minutes I could be in the woods building a fort. And I was 12 years old, and going into sixth grade. That's how I got to Virginia, Minnesota.
Well, all right. When did your family start bringing in exchange students?
Well, at first, my parents, just to talk about the house we lived in, Virginia is a mining town in the Mesabi Iron Range, northern Minnesota, small houses, except the mining companies around the turn of the century, early 1900s, built these huge houses for their superintendents, also called captains back in those days. So the houses are referred to as captain's houses, and they're usually a three-story house with a basement, so four stories. My parents both grew up in large houses. My father in a very large house in Chicago. And they had five kids, and that's the type of house they were looking for when they moved to Virginia. And,
didn't they move it out from the middle of town out to where we were actually located?
They actually moved the house from the location that the clinic was built that my father became part of. They moved it to the edge of town, this big white house, and my parents saw there was no yard, no fence, the gravel roads, no trees, but they had a vision. My mother especially, she saw the house and said, this is it. So, I forgot what the question was, Chuck.
Well, here you had this big house, and your family filled it, but you brought in other people.
Right. When it got down to only my younger sister and I, we were all about 2 years apart. I was fourth born, so... only the two of us in the house. Actually, when there were three of us left in the house, my parents took in a foreign exchange student, a high school girl from Egypt, and she stayed in the house for a year with us, went to high school in Virginia. Then 3 years later, in 1968, they took in another exchange student from Uganda. It was very interesting because... he was probably the first black man that a lot of people, and he was a young man, high school student, that a lot of people in Virginia saw in their life. When we moved to Virginia, there was one black person. He actually didn't live in town. He lived in a rural area, but he'd work in town. He was a mechanic. His name was Ed White. And he said that it was his town, and if anybody of his color wanted to move in, they'd have to talk to him first.
Uh-huh.
But the long and the short of it is, there was a lot of racism, even though there were no blacks.
Really?
And this young man from Uganda felt that when he would walk to school. It wasn't just out of curiosity people would look at him. They'd stare him down. And he could feel this. He talked to my mother about it. Those were the first two students brought in. That same year that we had the man from Uganda, Barney was his name, they brought in a student, a college student, community college. He was from Jordan.
Okay.
And believe it or not, even though I was only 20 years old, I got married that year, and my wife and I, and then our young daughter was born to her a few months later. Whoops.
okay.
We lived on third floor of the house. So it was a fairly full house.
Yeah.
My sister, myself, my wife, my daughter, two international students, and my parents. From there, my parents, there was a young black man who lived down in Duluth, which is about 60 miles south of Virginia. People that listen to this program hear about Duluth.
Yes, they do.
And he was going to play football for the community college, and he came up to get a place to live. And the college didn't have dorms. And he went around town. They gave him a list of various apartments. He could look, get an apartment. Basically got the door slammed in his face. Finally, his coach said, you know, there's a house on the north edge of town. Dr. and Mrs. Mock live there. Why don't you go check with them? Didn't call them or anything. He just sends the kid over and he knocked on the door. And he told this story at both my father's funeral and my mother's. Came to the house, knocked on the door. My mother answered the door. He said he was looking for a place to live while he went to college. And she said, well, we don't rent rooms here. And she said, but you know, my husband's coming home for lunch shortly. Why don't you come in and have lunch with us? And the way he told the story was, he said, so I had lunch with Dr. and Mrs. Mock, and that was the first of many lunches with the doctor and his wife. Obviously, they took him in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my wife and I were still living there, because I remember a photograph of him, a photo of him holding our young daughter. And you know, a lot of these people became very close to the family.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it was another student from Duluth, and it was international students, some from South America, Colombia, Brazil, Africa, there was Uganda, lots of Middle Eastern students. These were all college students. Jordan, Lebanon, Libya.
Now, by this time, were you still living in the house?
No, I finally moved out. Actually, a couple of years after we were married, we moved out. And then it was just my parents and students. And my mother would take care of those students. They had it.
Yeah, I take it.
You know, sit down meals, and they did have to do the dishes. They had to do their own dishes. But I think my dad laid down the law on that. You know, he would see how much my mother would be doing. And so that's, they had 42 students between 1965 and 1982.
Hmm.
Oh. And
that's when your dad retired?
He retired in 82. He was 65, I believe. He had heart surgery a year before, and realized if he was going to do anything else with his life, he better do it now. Otherwise, he was just going to keep working as a doctor.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get out into the world. He was kind of an adventuresome sort, as you well know.
Very much so. I remember him well.
And so he did. He retired in 82, and they immediately went into the mission field through their church, the Anglican Church, or Episcopal Church in this country. And he wasn't a doctor, so to speak, but they taught. When he went over into Africa, they went to Uganda and Kenya. mainly Uganda because of our second foreign exchange student,
yeah,
Barney.
Sure.
And, by the way, I'm still in touch with Barney passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And his cousin passed away, but I'm still in touch with his cousin's two sons, David and Paul.
That's good to hear.
And, help him out a little bit. So, they retired and went into the mission field in Uganda and Kenya. And 10 years later, my father passed away. And another 10 years later, my mother passed away. She did not open the house up to a lot of students, but she did invite a young man that they'd gotten to know when they were in the mission field from Kenya,
mm-hmm,
to come to the house, and she would pay for his college and provide him with, you know, everything he needed.
Right.
William. And William's, he's like a member of the family, you know. When we listed the survivors when my mother passed away, he was, mm-hmm, he was listed, which raised a few eyebrows. Did they adopt him? it was a good life. And, you know, not just for me, but my children. Mm-hmm. I always remember going to the house, and there were students from other countries there. And they still talk about it. It's amazing. It's an international house, no doubt.
Indeed.
And so I learned a lot from an example, by example, which is the best way to learn from anybody. From my parents, to have an open heart and an open home to people of all races and, you know, all religions. And it was a good lesson to be learned. And, so that's how it started.
Right. And now you have opened up your house. You know, you took over the house, right?
Yeah. When my mother passed away in 2002, I was working on the railroad, and I was working right out of Virginia. So my wife and I bought the house from my siblings, and my wife has always been one to open up her home to people, so our homes. Mm-hmm. That's the way she was. So we immediately, with all the extra room, started taking in students and international students and local students, college students.
Yeah.
They would pay rent if they could, but that wasn't what it was all about. A lot of times we were helping them, maybe providing something to do to earn their way. They were always willing to do, you know, whether, I think there's 65 windows in that house. So.
Well, that's a lot of window washing.
If they ever asked what they could do, a lot of times it was, well, you can always wash some windows. But it's just a rich life to touch other people's lives like that. And just to be open to different cultures. And it's an education for, I mean, you receive so much when you give like that.
I think in giving, that's when we receive the most. Whether it's in the giving of love or of just of human kindness, it doesn't have to be material giving, but in giving, that's what so much more comes back. That's not why you do it, but it does.
Yeah. The old King James language in the Bible says it is more blessed to give than to receive. Well, to me, that simply means you're blessed a lot more when you give than when you receive.
I think you're.
And we all have a hard time. Most of us have a hard time receiving.
Yeah.
We don't want to be the ones that have to receive. We'd like to be the ones that are able to give.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever the case may be,
it's good to be able to receive as well, because you don't receive, somebody can't give.
That's true. That's true.
Peter, it's been a lot of fun visiting with you. It's great having you down here visiting me in person, but I think our listeners will enjoy hearing this story. Thank you for sharing it with us.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
Okay.
By the way, Mike, someday we might meet. We're not very far apart.
I'm hoping that'll happen. Good night, Peter. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good to be here.
And thank you, listeners, for letting me share a little bit of my family with you tonight. Thanks to World News Trust and the Spiritual UN. Thanks to James Boomy, our third sponsor. And thanks to Mike for all the wonderful scripts that he writes. And not to mention the books. Johnny Moon. look for Mike's books on Amazon or on our show's website. Don't forget to stay tuned for Black Op Radio with Len Osanek, our producer. And thanks to you too, Len. Good night, Mike, and thanks.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being if it's just been politics all along? What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through all American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity and that is all energy free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American Founders version? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org. WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first. Some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org. The latest book from author Mike Pelacek, Johnny Moon. I've read JFK Assassination Fiction by Don DeLillo and Norman Mailer and can tell you that this new novel not only is Mike's best book yet, it's much better than DeLillo's and Mailer's efforts to do justice to the most important event in U.S. history. Johnny Moon tells the story of a third grader in a Catholic school who wants to do what President John F. Kennedy asked us all to do. Johnny has told his classmates he wants to go to the moon. In fact, he wants to be the first one on the moon. And so the kids brand him with the nickname Johnny Moon. Sister M&M's is Johnny's teacher. Her sister was in Dallas that day, right up close to the limousine, taking pictures just as it happened. She saw some things that did not get reported back in Johnny's hometown Daily News. Sister M&M's and Johnny and the third grade Sacred Heart class decide to tell the truth about what happened. Harvey Wasserman on Johnny Moon. Mike Palachek is a master of mixing the ethos of the heartland with great moments in history. His Johnny Moon evokes that time in our national story when getting to our favorite satellite was mated with the generation's coming of age. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. The latest book from author Mike Palachek, Johnny Moon,